All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're going to be talking about non-competes and confidential information. Really interesting stuff.
Yeah, definitely some key areas of employment law. We see these issues come up all the time, and this case we're about to discuss really highlights some important things for law students to be aware of.
So we're diving into this case, Nicholson versus DeWitt Stern Group. It stems from a bankruptcy case from way back in the 90s.
Yeah, mid-90s, bankruptcy of UFG International, an insurance brokerage.
Now, you might be thinking, okay, a bankruptcy case from the 90s. Why does this matter to me as a busy law student today?
Right, seems a little dusty, maybe.
But stick with us because this case, it really digs into those scenarios where a company's going under.
Yeah, it's not pretty. Things are falling apart, and then they try to use non-competes to hold on to employees and prevent them from using customer information, all that. This case really digs into when those agreements are actually enforceable and when they're not. So it's super relevant even today.
So what happened was, this company, UFG International, they went bankrupt. The trustee, basically the person overseeing the bankruptcy, tried to stop two former employees from working for
Right,
competitors.
trying to enforce these non-competes, even though the company itself had gone under. And the thing is, these employees, they were let go because of UFG's own financial troubles.
So it wasn't like they were fired for performance issues.
Nope, not at all.
It was purely because the company was going belly up. So that's what makes this case so interesting. It's like, can the company really enforce these agreements under those circumstances?
Yeah, exactly. And what kind of information is actually considered confidential that they can protect?
So those are the big questions we're tackling today. So to really understand what the court decided, we need to go back and look at the whole timeline.
Right, lay it all out.
So UFG, as we mentioned, they were an insurance brokerage and they filed for bankruptcy in August of 1995.
But before that, back in June of 95, they let go of two longtime employees from their commercial lines department. Paul Olshan, he had been there since 1962, and Roger Kluge, he joined in 64 and became a manager.
So we're talking about decades of service here,
Long time.
not some new hires.
Not at all. And this is important because they both, Olshan and Kluge, they had employment agreements.
And those agreements, I'm guessing, had some non-compete clauses in them.
Oh, you bet. Those agreements had the standard non-compete clauses, preventing them from going to work for competitors, and non-solicitation clauses, to stop them from poaching UFG's clients.
So what did they do after they got laid off?
Well, Olshan went to work for DSI and Kluge went to DSG, both of them competing insurance brokerage firms.
Oh, so they went straight to the competition.
Yep, and the bankruptcy trustee for UFG was not happy about
I
it.
can imagine.
So they sued them, not just Olshan and Kluge, but their new employers too, DSI and DSG.
They went after everyone.
Yeah, they threw the book at them. Breach of contract, breach of fiduciary duty, conversion, misappropriation, unfair competition, unjust enrichment, you name it, they alleged it.
So the trustee was basically saying these guys took UFG's confidential client info and started using it to their advantage, right?
Exactly, using it to solicit clients, all that. But here's where it gets really interesting. Before any of this legal action really got going, UFG actually stopped servicing its customers. This was July 95, a whole month before they even filed for bankruptcy.
They stopped working with their clients?
Yep, stopped servicing them. And get this, later on, the trustee actually sold UFG's customer list and records to another insurance brokerage.
They sold the very information they were claiming was confidential.
You got it. So despite all the trustees' claims, the court sided with Olshan, Kluge, and their new employers. They granted summary judgment in favor of the defendants.
So the trustee lost big time.
Big time.
So why? Why did the court rule that way? What were the legal reasons behind that decision?
All right, so let's break it down, starting with those restrictive covenants. We're talking about the non-compete agreements.
Right, the ones that were supposed to prevent Olshan and Kluge from working for the competition.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, under New York law, which is what applied in this case, these agreements, they're not automatically enforceable. They have to be reasonable.
Reasonable in what way?
Well, the scope of the restrictions can't be too broad. The duration, how long they last, can't be forever.
Right.
And most importantly, they have to protect legitimate business interests of the employer, without unfairly preventing the employee from earning a living.
So it's a balancing act?
Absolutely. The courts are trying to protect businesses, but also, make sure people can still work and support themselves.
Right. It wouldn't be fair to completely prevent someone from working in their field just because they left a company.
Exactly. And that's where this idea of mutuality of obligation comes in. This was a big factor in the court's decision.
Mutuality of obligation. That sounds like a mouthful. What does that even mean?
Basically, it means that in an employment relationship, there's this give and take.
Okay.
The employee agrees to work, the employer agrees to provide work and pay them for it. You scratch my back, I scratch yours.
Right. A two-way street.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, in this case, the court said that UFG, by terminating Olshan and Kluge without cause, they broke that mutuality.
Because the company was the one who ended the relationship, not the employees.
Right. And it wasn't because the employees did anything wrong. It was purely because UFG was having its own financial problems. So the court basically said, you can't just fire people because you're in trouble and then try to restrict their future employment.
That makes sense. It's like you broke the agreement first, so you can't really hold them to it anymore.
Exactly. And to really hammer it home, the court even pointed out that UFG had messed up Olshan's compensation. They hadn't paid him everything they owed him.
So even beyond the termination, they had breached the agreement in other ways.
Exactly. So their argument for enforcing the non-compete was even weaker.
So it wasn't just that they had non-competes in place, it was the whole context of how the employment ended.
Absolutely. So for all you law students out there, remember this. If your company's struggling financially and has to lay people off, don't assume those non-competes are going to hold up in court.
Interesting. So the non-competes were out the window. But what about the confidential customer lists? The trustee was claiming that Olshan and Kluge took those and used them improperly.
Right. That was the other big part of their argument. But the court wasn't buying it. They brought up this thing called the readily ascertainable doctrine.
Readily ascertainable? What does that mean?
Basically, it means, could this information be easily found elsewhere? Is it really a secret?
Okay.
And in this case, the court said, no, it's not. They said UFG's customer information wasn't really confidential because they were just businesses with public locations.
Like if you wanted to find those customers, you could just look them up.
Exactly. It's not like they had some secret database of ultra-exclusive clients.
Yeah.
It was all pretty public knowledge.
So it's not really a trade secret if anyone could figure it out with a little bit of effort.
Right. And remember, UFG had already stopped servicing those clients. So the court was like, if you weren't even working with them anymore, why are you so worried about someone else doing business with them?
So the fact that they'd abandoned those clients actually weakened their claim that the information was confidential.
Exactly. And then, to top it all off, remember how the trustee sold those same customer lists to another company?
Oh, yeah. That doesn't really help their case for confidentiality.
Right. It's hard to argue something's a secret if you're selling it to someone else.
So takeaway here is, just having a list of customers, especially if they're publicly known businesses, that's not enough to claim it's a trade secret.
You need something more. Some kind of unique non-public information.
Right, like special contact details, pricing agreements, things like that.
Exactly, something that gives you a real advantage in the market. Now, there's one more thing that really sunk the trustee's case, and that's the evidence, or lack thereof. This all played out in the context of summary judgment, right?
So, to be clear for our listeners, summary judgment is when a court makes a decision without going to a full trial.
Right.
Because there's no real dispute about the key facts of the case.
Exactly. And to win summary judgment, you have to show that there's no genuine dispute about any important facts.
So there's no need for a trial because everything's pretty clear cut.
Right. Now, in this case, the trustee, they just didn't have the evidence to back up their claims.
Okay.
They relied on this declaration from someone who didn't even have firsthand knowledge of what happened.
So they were basically saying things without having any real proof.
Exactly. And the court was like, nope, that's not how it works. To fight a summary judgment motion, you need concrete evidence, something admissible in court.
So like sworn statements from people who actually witnessed the events in question?
Exactly. Firsthand accounts, not just hearsay or speculation. And the trustee just didn't have that. That's why they lost.
So the big lesson here is you can't just make accusations. You have to have the proof to back them up.
Especially in court, evidence is everything.
All right, so to wrap things up, what are the key takeaways from this whole Nisselsen case for our listeners, those aspiring lawyers out there?
I think a big one is when you're dealing with employment agreements, really pay attention to those termination clauses. Be super clear about what cause means.
So if an employer wants to enforce a non-compete, they need to be sure they're terminating the employee for a legitimate reason that's spelled out in the agreement.
Exactly. And it can't be just because the company's struggling financially.
What about confidential information? Any advice for those drafting agreements or advising clients?
Don't just slap a confidential label on everything. Think strategically about what truly needs protection.
And remember, a basic customer list, especially if it's publicly available information, that's probably not going to cut it as a trade secret.
Right. And finally, never underestimate the importance of good evidence. Make sure you have solid proof to support your claims. Hearsay and speculation won't win cases.
So the Nicholson case, it really drives home this point. Employers can't just enforce non-competes whenever they feel like it.
It has to be fair. You terminate someone without a good reason, you lose your right to restrict their future employment.
Courts are generally hesitant to limit someone's ability to work and earn a living.
Right. These non-compete agreements, they're not looked upon favorably. They really have to be justified and applied in a way that's fair to both sides.
Now, here's a thought for our listeners to cue on. What if UFG had gone after Olshan and Kluge while they were still operating, before the bankruptcy and the sale of the customer lists?
Interesting question.
Do you think the court's decision about the confidentiality of the customer information and the enforceability of the non-competes might have been different?
It's a good question. It really makes you think about how the timing and the specific circumstances of a case can affect the outcome.
It's not just about the law itself. It's about how all these pieces fit together.
Exactly. It's a puzzle. And sometimes those subtle details can make all the difference.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining us for another deep dive into the fascinating world of employment law.
Always a pleasure. And to our listeners, keep those legal brains churning, and we'll see you next time.
See you next time.